Din is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from ordinarily from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but please don't call unless we specifically ask for calls on this hour, because ordinarily when we have Dr. Russ Blaylock with us, why, we don't have time for calls. Anyway, Dr. Blaylock's going to be talking about, well, good evening, Russell. How are you tonight?
Fine, Dr. Stan. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. And Dr. Blaylock's a retired neurosurgeon who practiced neurosurgery in Jackson, Mississippi for another number of years. And now, of course, he spends full time researching and has written a couple of wonderful books we carry, The Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life and Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, and Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills. And he has a newsletter. We'll tell you a little bit later how to get his newsletter. It's actually syndicated all across the country, put out by Newsmax. But we're privileged to have him tonight, and what are we going to be talking about?
I thought we would cover the subject of mercury.
All right, fine. Then let's talk about mercury.
The reason I wanted to bring up mercury is because there's some new information about mercury. One of the things that came up as a problem during all the controversy about the vaccines was that there were very few studies that had ever been done on the type of mercury that's added to vaccines. The thimerosal, and the type of mercury in thimerosal, is called phenylmercury. Most of the studies that have been done on mercury toxicity use methylmercury, and that's the kind that's found in fish and seafood. The other kind that's of concern is mercury vapor, which comes from dental amalgam fillings in the teeth. It vaporizes and is absorbed through the tissues of the mouth and nasal cavity, and can enter the brain and the blood system. This kind, once it enters the brain, it's converted to what we call inorganic or ionized mercury, which is by far the most toxic form of mercury known. So all of these studies have been done using either mercury vapor or primarily methyl mercury. So some new studies on phenylmercury have disclosed why it's so toxic. And we know that when you eat fish that has mercury in it, this methylmercury, that it's absorbed very easily into the brain. But once in the brain, it's not really the methylmercury that produces most of the toxicity. Slowly, the brain will remove that methyl group and convert it into that very powerfully toxic ionic-type mercury. But it does it very slowly with methylmercury. And it doesn't convert very well. Only about 10% of methylmercury is converted. Well, when they studied phenylmercury, the type that's in the vaccines, what they found is that when it enters the brain, it's converted, about 71% is converted to the toxic ionic type mercury.
Could you hold that for just a moment? We'll be back here in just a moment. Our special guest this evening is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he's talking about ethylmercury, of course. This is what they have put into our childhood vaccines for years, and of course they still put it into the influenza shots that they insist everybody has to take. And unfortunately, there are many people who believe that this is very, very toxic. And Dr. Blaylock is going ahead talking about some of these studies that demonstrate the toxicity of this thimerosal, this ethyl type of mercury. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, why don't you pick up the story right there?
Well, the important thing that they discovered in this study was that a much larger percentage of the vaccine-type mercury is converted to the very toxic mercury ion, 71%. Only 10% of the mercury in fish is converted. Now, why that's important, not only is this ionized mercury the most toxic, but once it's in the brain, it's almost impossible to remove it. The body's system cannot remove it. So it essentially stays in high levels from then on. So that's what makes the mercury in vaccines infinitely more brain damaging than the type that's found in fish. Now, the other thing is that in fish, usually fish also have selenium levels in it. And selenium helps neutralize mercury toxicity. So that if you're eating a fish that happens to be in a pond or a lake or the ocean somewhere that has high selenium levels, it neutralizes a lot of that toxicity. So these were important factors. Well, there's no selenium in a vaccine. So that when you start vaccinating people with that, you're producing a very high levels of the most toxic form of mercury. Interesting things, when you look at little babies, because they're small body size and the fact that their brain is developing so rapidly, and that it's the ionized type mercury that's the most toxic, the kind that's in the vaccine. Well, when they looked at children's vaccines to see, well, how much are you this are you getting or giving to these children, they found that the children were getting huge doses of mercury. And this went back when they had this investigation, this memo that came from the Merck Pharmaceutical Company. They found that there was a memo from one of their expert vaccine experts had sent a memo to the president of the company saying, I've calculated the doses in a child at 6 months, and if they get all of their vaccines they're supposed to get, they're receiving 87 times higher than the limit of the toxic dose set by the Environmental Protection Agency for an adult. The company took no action. In fact, they added 5 more vaccines to the schedule.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he was commenting that, you know, it was sometime in the 1980s and 1990s when the senior vaccinologist for Merck Company sent a directive to the president of the company, pointing out that at the time of 6 months, by the time a child was 6 months of age, they were getting something like 85 times the maximum toxic level of mercury for an adult. In other words, they were getting massive doses of the mercury during that time when the brain was beginning to form. So there were people within Merck and the other major vaccine manufacturers that knew there were toxic doses of mercury being given to our children during the time when the brains were forming. And so please pick up the story there, Russell.
Well, and they also knew, through there were some, according to congressional investigations, the head of the CDC admitted there were 2,000 studies on mercury that demonstrated its extreme toxicity at levels far lower than were be given, than was given to these children, and even producing toxicity levels lower than were given to adults. So here you have adults and children being given this massive dose of this extremely toxic form of mercury. Now, in reviewing a lot of this research, I'm going to give a talk in Florida in September on this subject. So I've reviewed a lot of the research on mercury, and it's an amazing thing, because mercury is an unusual metal in that in the brain it causes the brain's protective system to keep an amino acid called glutamate from building up in the brain. Now, when glutamate builds up in the brain, even in very small concentrations, it starts killing connections between brain cells, and eventually it'll kill the brain cells themselves. We call this an excitotoxic process, or excitotoxicity. Well, mercury is a very powerful trigger for excitotoxicity. Now, when they looked at it in the laboratory, they found out, in fact, virtually all of the neurodegenerative power of mercury was caused by excitotoxicity, and that if you block that process, mercury lost most of its toxicity to the brain. So it is a major contributor of brain damage. And this seems to be what is happening in these autistic kids and kids with ADD and ADHD and all these neurodevelopmental language problems we're seeing, which, by the way, since 1980 has increased some 600%. There's over 1,500,000 children now listed as having autism spectrum disorders. So just since 1980, we've seen this 600% astronomical rise in these children's neurodevelopmental problems. No explanation from the medical community anywhere, but all this time we've had this massive amount of research that demonstrated that most likely it was the mercury. We know that when you stimulate the immune system by vaccination, it activates the brain's special immune system. It has its own immune system. And one of the cells, or the main cell in the brain that is its immune system, is called the microglia. Mercury is a very powerful activator of microglia. It's one of the first things that happens when the brain's exposed to mercury. It turns on this immune cell. If you keep that immune cell turned on, it starts destroying the brain slowly over years. In fact, there's a delay between the injection of the mercury and the full toxicity of this process. For instance, in Minamata, Japan, where they had this massive poisoning of people, it took as long as 15 years before there was a full onset of the damage. And in another case, experimentally, they found a 7-year delay. So there's this period at which all this damage is occurring before you start developing the clinical symptoms. And this is how they hide a lot of these newer studies in which they look at kids that are exposed to high mercury levels, and they'll do the study within 3 or 4 years because they know by then they're not going to get the full-blown syndrome that they'll develop several years later. And if you look at all the studies in which they always quote to say, well, there's no relationship to be found between vaccines and autism and ADD, they always cut those studies off at age 4 or 5. They never extend it further. When these studies have been extended all the way up to the teenage years, they find, again, this a 280% to a 600% increase in these disorders related to the vaccines. So when you combine this immune stimulation by the vaccine itself plus the mercury, we find there's a synergistic toxicity that really inflames the brain rather intentionally over years. And so that you have this gradual degeneration of the brain, and this is what happens to these children. Well, ironically, when you look at the pathology of the brain of these children, it's almost exactly what you're seeing in Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and Lou Gehrig disease in terms of this chronic inflammation, chronic activation of the brain's immune cells, and this excitotoxic process. So all of the pieces of this puzzle are now being fitted together, so we see the big picture, but still we have a national policy that says, well, we need more vaccines. We need to make sure all the adults get their flu vaccine, which has a full dose of mercury, and then they want to inject mercury in children aged 6 to 24 months. They said they need their flu vaccine every year. They're encouraging pregnant women to get injected with these mercury-containing vaccines. And any person with chronic health problems is supposed to get it. And now they're saying all 42 million school-aged children between age 5 and 18 should get it. So we have this, they want the mass segment of the population, elderly, babies, teenagers, to be getting yearly injections of this mercury that now we have absolute proof produces destruction of brain connections and brain cells.
And what's even more tenable, you know, we've taken the mercury, the thimerosal, out of the childhood vaccines for children here, but we've left it in for the childhood vaccines that are to be given throughout the rest of the world, the third world countries that certainly Bill Gates wants to spend so much money, making sure they all get vaccinated. Because they really care about the children, and yet what is it going to do to their brains? What destructive effect will it have as all of the children in third world countries are given free vaccines that they know are toxic?
Well, and what it's producing, as you're outlining here, is a purposeful dumbing down of literally hundreds of millions of children in the developing countries. Because by doing this, you're going to guarantee they'll never reach the intellectual capacity and the creative capacity to compete in the world. There are always going to be wards of the state. And now this can run a whole spectrum with mercury. Some people are severely affected and become autistic. Some are less affected and become ADD and ADHD. Some have language difficulties. Some have behavioral difficulties. Some just have a limitation of their IQ development. So there's a whole spectrum of problems caused by mercury when it enters the brain. So it's not an all-or-none toxicity. Now, one of the interesting things I turned up in my research was they found that actually the lower doses produce more toxicity to the brain than the very high doses.
Well, why would that be?
Well, it's because the very high doses block so much activity of the cell that the glutamate cannot be efficiently released. But when you have the lower doses, probably, you know, what they used was 10 micromoles versus 100 micromoles. At the 10 micromoles, they had a 9.8-fold increase in the concentration of glutamate in the brain. At 100 micromoles, they only had a 2.4-fold increase in glutamate. But even at the lower, at that 2.4 concentration increase, that was enough to produce excitotoxicity. But, the lower dose was producing even worse excitotoxicity. Now, this is a phenomenon that's being talked about in the world of toxicology a lot now, because we're seeing this is happening in hormones and various other toxins, that, in fact, sometimes the lower dose is more toxic than the higher dose. We see that with lead. We see it with cadmium. We see it with fluoride. And so we see this U-shaped curve where actually the lower dose can be more toxic than the higher dose. But they're both toxic. It just depends. This also explains why, some of the recent studies on Alzheimer's disease found that, well, everybody with Alzheimer's disease has elevated brain mercury, particularly in certain parts of the brain. But they also found people who didn't have Alzheimer's disease who had even higher levels of mercury. The difference may be this U-shaped toxicity curve, that the lower doses may actually be more toxic than the higher doses. It also depends on your defenses against mercury. The brain has a lot of ways to defend itself against mercury, special enzymes and molecules that can bind the mercury so it's not as toxic. So people who have high mercury levels but don't get the disease probably have a lot of these defense mechanisms. The people who have poor defense mechanisms at the very low doses, they have severe Alzheimer's disease. And our experimental studies confirm all of this. So this explains it, and so there's not this dose-response relationship you would normally expect. So some people can be exposed to very low concentrations, and they'll have devastating disease. Others will have high concentrations and have less severe disease.
But aren't we actually seeing a significant increase in Alzheimer's disease in our senior citizens, and not necessarily age-related?
Yeah, we're seeing it, in fact, in all the neurodegenerative diseases, Parkinson's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, Alzheimer's disease, and they're occurring at a much earlier age than they used to. So it's not just because the population is getting older. They looked at that. They found out they're actually moving into the younger age groups, the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
So what is the Centers for Disease Control doing about this? Are they aware of the studies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this has all been talked about, but they're not taking any action.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock. And Russell was saying that the information has been made available to the Centers for Disease Control and to other government agencies, but they're not doing anything about that. And certainly, do we know, though, that these latest studies, these rather convincing studies you're talking about, are these readily available to the people in high positions in government?
Oh, sure. These are all in some of the top peer-reviewed journals. The leading journal of toxicity to the brain is called Neurotoxicology, and another one is Neurotoxicology and Teratology. Most of these articles appear in those two journals. Those are the leading journals in toxicology of the brain. So, these aren't in obscure journals done by obscure laboratories. These are major laboratories, major researchers, the leaders in the field. What they've done, they've just chosen to ignore it. In fact, even the CDC itself admitted that children exposed to thimerosal within three different vaccines had a 27-fold increase in their risk of autism. So they admitted it, but they took no action to change the policies. Now, it's interesting that since the thimerosal has been removed from most childhood vaccines, we're now starting to see a fall in the number of cases of autism, which goes along with this research that I've been describing, is that mercury is a very powerful trigger of excitotoxicity in the brain, and that if you block excitotoxicity, you block its toxic effect. So it is an excitotoxic mechanism in the brain. Now, that's the same mechanism that is now known to cause Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, Lou Gehrig disease. It's the same process that causes destruction and strokes and brain trauma, viral infections of the brain. All of these things trigger excitotoxicity, and that's how they destroy brain connections and brain cells. So here we are purposely injecting a substance that produces the same type of damage that we see in viral encephalitis, that we see in Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. It's insane, and it makes no sense.
Well, of course, there are a lot of things that are going on that really don't make any sense from a logical point of view. And yet, of course, one of the things you had pointed out to me, and which we do offer to our listeners, those who are skeptics, was an article by Dr. Fudenberg dealing with Alzheimer's disease in the elderly and the relationship to influenza shots. Would you like to mention that briefly? I thought that was so significant.
Yeah, Dr. Fudenberg was probably one of the most world-renowned immunologists. He's published 300 or 400 papers in leading journals on immunology. And his group looked at people who had flu vaccines, the elderly, primarily who had flu vaccines, 5 years in a row. And what they found is that people who had those injections increased their risk of developing Alzheimer's disease tenfold. So there's this astronomical increase in the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Now, when we look at what mercury does to the brain, we're not surprised, because when that elderly person goes and gets that injection, that mercury travels to the brain, is converted to that most toxic form of mercury. It binds to the structures in the brain and cannot be removed except by special methods, and stays there. Then the next year, when they get another injection, more mercury moves into the brain, and it adds to the previous year's mercury, and it keeps doing that year after year after year.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock was talking about the work done by Dr. Fudenberg. Dr. Fudenberg is a sort of a dean of vaccinologists, written 300 or 400 papers, and one of them dealt with the danger of the mercury and influenza vaccine for the elderly, and he had pointed out that if you took 3 or 4 influenza shots over a 5-year period, you were between 60 and 65. 10 years down the line, your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease increased 1,000%. 1,000%. And if our people out there in the listening audience are skeptical, can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be glad to send you the page we copied off of Dr. Fudenberg's webpage. It's just an abstract of the article that he'd written. When I first heard this, and I called Dr. Blaylock and said, I want to see that. I want to be able to verify that. And, of course, I know Russell always has the scientific studies for anything he says. So we got it, but we want to offer it to you. And you're in the listening audience. You say, I don't think this could be going on. If this was going on, my doctor would know. The public health officer would be there to protect us. The Centers for Disease Control. So we'll be glad to send you that page free of charge if you would like it. Or you can go to Dr. Pudenberg's website on your own and track it down. That's Pudenberg. But go right ahead, Russell.
Well, when you look at Alzheimer's disease, there's a particular part of the brain called the entorhinal area. And it has the highest levels of mercury. It is the first part of the brain that undergoes destruction with Alzheimer's disease. In fact, a study found that in people who develop Alzheimer's disease, it begins to shrink decades before any symptoms appear whatsoever. Even at age 30, they begin to see shrinkage. So this is a very early area. Now, the interesting thing is that part of the brain is connected directly to the nerves that go to smell, the olfactory nerve that lines the lining of your nose. Well, when you have these amalgam fillings in your teeth, the mercury vapor has been shown to enter the olfactory nerve, travel along the nerve, and enter the first place in the brain, which is the entorhinal area. So, the detective story shows that indeed this seems to be the path of entry. And this is the highest level of mercury in the brain for people with Alzheimer's disease. So, once we tie all that together and we begin to see that mercury can produce all the changes in the brain that we see with Alzheimer's disease. You know, it's characterized by amyloid deposits and neurofibrillary tangles. Mercury can do that. When you have excitotoxicity precipitated by mercury in the brain, it produces those two pathological hallmarks of the disease. So, in every way that you're looking at this, mercury comes back to being one of the major culprits. When we look at Alzheimer's brains, there's an intense activity of these immune cells, these microglia, particularly in the hippocampus, entorhinal area, and frontal lobes, where the disease concentrates. Mercury is one of the most powerful activators of microglia. So, as we track all of this down, it's almost undeniable that anyone would say that mercury plays no part in this disease. We have far too much evidence that it does. But they continue to deny it, and they continue to promote a policy that's going to drastically increase it. Now, if we look at this study Dudenberg did, looking at people over age 55 getting this vaccine, what's going to happen when a child 6 to 24 months old is getting this vaccine every year, or a child age 5 to 18 as recommended by these vaccine experts? So if a child is 18 and he's receiving these vaccines, doses of mercury for the next 30 years of his life, the chances of him developing degenerative brain disease are astronomically high, and it would be done by the government. Now, when we look at, for instance, something that's on another scale, and that is heart disease, the government recommended people use vegetable oil. There is overwhelming evidence that vegetable oil may be one of the main culprits in producing heart disease, the leading killer in the United States. So here's a government policy with heart disease, and following their recommendation has killed literally millions of Americans. And we have this other policy with the vaccines and the thimerosal and the amalgam in the teeth that is also destroying brains and ending lives early.
And, of course, one of the things that really disturbs me is, there's adequate evidence that, the mercury in the amalgam fillings, is toxic and gets into your brain. And yet, of course, there's an organized effort by the people who actually control the dental associations to go after dentists who will admit this or are concerned or even actively encouraging their patients to get the mercury out of their mouths. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Balog here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dr. Russell Balog, and we're talking about really what's going on as far as the mercury is concerned. We were just mentioning the toxicity of dental fillings, and certainly this has been known for a long period of time, that the mercury in those fillings actually vents out into the system. And would you like to talk a little bit about the danger of mercury fillings? I think that is something that certainly everybody should give serious consideration to, getting those mercury fillings out.
Well, when you look at dental amalgam, what it is, it's an amalgam of several metals that are just mixed together. The major metal, 50% of the amalgam, is mercury, and it's metallic mercury, which has been shown that when you let mercury just sit still, it slowly evaporates. It turns from a metal directly into a vapor without turning into a liquid. Well, they looked at the amalgam in people's teeth, and they found out that actually inside of people's mouth, when they measured mercury vapor levels, it was very high, anywhere from 6 micrograms to as much as 150 micrograms per meter cubed. Now, what makes it interesting is when you measure people's mouth mercury levels, when they have a lot of these fillings in their mouth, at 150 micrograms per meter, if we compare that to what the EPA said, air mercury levels have to be lower than this to not be toxic, it was 2 to 3 micrograms per meter cubed. So, in fact, they used to put mercury in paint to prevent mold from forming. Well, they found out if you paint indoors, the mercury level would reach about 2 to 3 to 15 micrograms per meter cubed. And so they outlawed mercury in paint. Here they're putting it in your mouth. It's 150 micrograms per meter cubed in your mouth. They weren't concerned about this. Well, they found that actually that was just kind of a resting level of mercury inside of your mouth. When they had people chew on something, even a rubber tubing, they found out actually the mercury level went up much higher. It could go up to 300 micrograms per meter cubed. So the level rose as you begin to chew. If you drank hot liquids or ate hot foods, the mercury vapor left the filling even faster. There's a videotape on the IAOMT website, which is the dentist that deal with mercury, which shows a dental tooth with a filling in it that's over 20 years old, and it has the special lighting in which you can see the mercury vapor.
Hold that off right there, Ruby. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Dr. Russ Blaylock. We're talking about the mercury in the fillings, and that the mercury in your fillings are actually constantly venting into your mouth, and with a level that may be several times above the maximum amount the EPA allows. And yet, of course, if you begin to chew or take something hot, why, you can go up to really, maybe 50 or 100 times that level. And, of course, that mercury that is in your then gets into your systems. You pick up the story there.
Right. And what I'm saying is you look at this video, you can see this tooth that has a filling that's over 20 years old, and the mercury is just flowing out of it. You can see the waves of the mercury vapor coming out of it. So that as long as this mercury is in your mouth, these amalgam fillings, you're constantly putting out mercury. Well, if you live in a house that has lead paint in it and your level is 2 to 3 micrograms per meter cubed, you don't stay in your house all the time, but you walk around with your teeth all the time. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you have this mercury vapor being released, and when you're eating and drinking coffee and tea and eating hot meals, the mercury level goes up even higher. So you have this constant exposure to this mercury vapor. Well, they even measured the amount of mercury in the gums around these fillings, and it was astronomically high. And, of course, mercury is a carcinogen, so it could increase oral cancers as well. We know that it damages the DNA. In connection to the Alzheimer's disease, you know, we know that people who have a certain gene called the APOE4 gene is found in about 80% of people that have Alzheimer's disease, if you have that gene. Well, interestingly, this same gene, if you have it, makes you much more sensitive to mercury toxicity. So, again, that's another link Alzheimer's disease, so that if you have the gene, you're going to end up very sensitive to mercury, much so than someone who has a different set of genes. So we have all of this evidence connecting the dots, but we still cannot get them to take the mercury out. Recently, in one of the journals, I think it was the Journal of the AMA, had a two articles on testing mercury amalgam in children to see if there was any neurological effect. And they did all of these behavioral tests on these children in both of these studies. And they, of course, announced that we didn't find any neurological deaths from children having dental amalgam. One was a 5-year study and one was a 7-year study. Now, I reviewed both of these articles very carefully just to see how they were done. And it was interesting that the children who had the dental amalgam had elevated levels of mercury in their blood and in their urine. And the control children, the one who did not have the dental amalgam in their teeth, also had elevated mercury, not as high. But when you do a control, you have to do a control that doesn't have any of the toxic substance in them. So here they, both the control and the positive patient with the dental amalgam both had elevated mercury, so the test was invalid, but they still reported it as having no effect. And, of course, as I outlined, a low level sometimes is more toxic than a higher level. So that invalidates both of those articles. The other thing is the delayed effect. We said that there's a delay that can last as long as 15 years before you develop full toxicity. So that invalidates both of those articles as well. But what was interesting in the article is that a year ago, the American Dental Society was adamantly denying that dental amalgam released any mercury vapor whatsoever and did not increase the amount of mercury inside of the body, period. In both articles, they measured the dental amalgam so that the children who had more fillings had higher urinary mercury levels, higher blood mercury levels. And so there was a direct correlation, and they both articles admitted it, which showed that the ADA has been lying all this time. Now, we had elaborate laboratory studies on humans and on animals that demonstrated indeed that this mercury vaporized and that it elevated the blood mercury significantly, sometimes as much as 2 or 3-fold higher than normal. And so they knew it all along. They were just lying. But now, since they've been caught in the Journal of the American Medical Association, they've had to admit it. But now they're saying, oh, well, these two studies show that even if it does, it doesn't hurt anything. Now, that flies in the face of thousands of studies that show that these low doses, even lower than that, are severely brain toxic over a gradual period. So the lies just continue, and people continue to get dental amalgam fillings instead of the ceramic fillings, which don't contain any mercury.
Well, now, of course, one of the excuses that's given is, well, the ceramic fillings don't hold up as well, and they have to be replaced every few years. Is there any truth to that at all?
Well, I have ceramic fillings, and they've been around for 5 years, and they haven't fallen out, and I've never had a bit of trouble. I talked to my dental friends about it, and they said, well, they tell us that, but we don't find any problem with ceramic fillings. And he said, in fact, the difference between the ceramic and the mercury filling is, see, when you put in a mercury filling, you have to drill out a lot of normal tooth. You have to undermine it so the mercury will stay in there. And so you end up drilling a lot more tooth than you should, and then you pack it full of this mercury filling. He said, when you do ceramic, because it adheres to the tooth itself, he says, all you drill out is the damaged part of the tooth, the caries, and therefore you save all of this normal tooth. Well, I don't know how many people I've looked at looking in their mouth at their amalgam, and all they have is just a little shell of the tooth, the enamel, and the whole tooth is filled with this mercury-containing amalgam, and that's because of this process. They have to drill all the normal tooth away. So, you know, just from that aspect, it makes a lot more sense. You'd have a much smaller filling. You would save your normal tooth by not putting this dental amalgam in your mouth.
Well, I think it's really one of the great tragedies of our time, the damage that is being done to the minds of our people. And there are people within organized medicine and dentistry who know exactly what they're doing, but of course they don't want the public to realize. Once a person does have Alzheimer's disease, is there anything that can be done? Certainly they should get their fillings out, but is there anything that can be done either to halt the process or to reverse it?
Well, there's been some rather remarkable cases of people who totally reversed Alzheimer's disease, even moderately severe Alzheimer's disease. They were found to have elevated mercury levels. They underwent a chelation program which removes the mercury. They increased their brain's antioxidant defenses, and they made a complete recovery. Now, when you look at Alzheimer's disease, most people think all these brain cells are dying. Well, that's a late process. And most of the period of Alzheimer's disease, what happens is the connections are being lost. That is, the synapse and the dendrites. They're the things that are lost early. The cells are still alive. And if you stop this destructive process, the brain cells can regrow their dendrites and their synaptic connections. And that's why these people recover. But you've got to get the mercury out. You've got to cool down those microglia cells that are all activated and stirred up. You've got to reduce brain inflammation. Now, one of the first studies that showed reducing the incidence of Alzheimer's dramatically was using an anti-inflammatory, endomethacin, which is an arthritis drug. And they found that people who took endomethacin for arthritis had an incidence of Alzheimer's disease dramatically lower than everyone else. Well, you don't have to use endomethacin. The omega-3 fatty acid component called DHA does the same thing, but it also helps repair those dendrites and synapses so that the brain repairs itself. It turns off these inflamed microglia, and the brain starts recovering. DHA also has been shown to block excitotoxicity. Now, there's a lot of things that do that, like the extract silymarin. It also will shut off these inflamed microglia cells. It blocks excitotoxicity. It's a powerful antioxidant. Curcumin does that. Melatonin does that. Melatonin is a very powerful inducer of the brain's antioxidant defenses, and it blocks excitotoxicity. And when we look at Alzheimer's patients, they all have low melatonin levels, much lower than the normal age matched people. So melatonin is one of the leading protectors of the brain. Mercury, fluoride, lower melatonin levels. Fluoride particularly is a powerful inhibitor of melatonin. Magnesium is a very powerful protector of the brain, and we know that all people who have Alzheimer's disease have low brain magnesium levels, and that if you raise their levels, it helps protect the brain. Things like N-acetyl-L-cysteine, which is used by the brain and all cells to make one of the most protective antioxidants in the cell called glutathione. When you take N-acetyl-L-cysteine, people call it NAC, it is very efficient. It also binds mercury and makes mercury non-toxic. The glutathione binds mercury and makes it non-toxic. So it is one of the most powerful protections against the toxicity. Selenium is also very important because selenium can bind mercury and make it non-toxic. It can also help remove mercury from the brain. The studies have shown that it can remove about 30% of the mercury within a year. So as you keep taking the selenium, it gradually pulls more and more mercury out of the brain, neutralizes what's there, and helps protect the brain against excitotoxicity. Now, things like vitamin D3 help reduce the inflammatory reaction. And a lot of these flavonoids like curcumin and silymarin and quercetin also reduce that inflammatory reaction, and the DHA does too. So what you're doing with these nutrients is you're counteracting all of these damaging effects that occur with mercury and occur with the Alzheimer's process and help repair the brain. Your B vitamins are very important because nerve cells use a lot of these, particularly vitamin B12 as methylcobalamin. We know that people with Alzheimer's disease have dramatically low vitamin B12 levels in their brain, and that they need high doses to get it back up. That's like 5,000 micrograms a day. And once they do that, then that helps repair these cells and make the cells work much more efficiently as well.
Well, now, what about the chelation? Was this intravenous chelation that you're speaking of?
Well, there's an oral chelation that's just as effective. DMPS, which is one of the chelating agents, another one is called DMSA. Now, DMSA is not as efficient as DMPS, which is about 10 times more potent, and it's relatively non-toxic. In fact, they even have a form you can rub on your skin, and it'll enter your skin and go to your brain and grab that mercury and remove it, and helps it flushes out through your kidneys. About 80% of mercury is stored in the colon. So, you know, people that have high mercury, we recommend they have flushing enemas to get rid of that mercury, and using a thing like the DMPS to bind the mercury in the colon to get rid of it. But it works very efficiently, and sometimes it takes years of DMPS treatments to gradually get all of the mercury out, because it's a very slow process. But if you support the brain and protect the brain while you're doing that, then it works very well. But if you look at the literature in terms of the ecology of mercury, there's really a panic among the researchers in this area, because our air mercury levels going up tremendously. We're seeing, for instance, in Texas, they have very high levels. North Carolina has high levels.
Is that related
Alabama.
Is that related to the burning of coal for electricity generating?
That's one of the leading causes of the air mercury is coal burning. Alabama, Georgia, Florida has very high levels. The Northeast has very high levels. Out West has very low levels, except for California. We're seeing such elevations, right? The South generally has this higher level of mercury, and when the hurricanes come in, it blows it all up north. I talked to one of the geological researchers in Pennsylvania. He showed me the maps and the readings. They take readings on mountains, and took me to his lab to show me these readings, and he said, when the hurricanes come in the Gulf, they blow all this mercury up here, and he said, our mercury levels start rising astronomically. Well, the concern is that we got all the fish polluted. He said now we're starting to see animal pollution, land animals and birds. We're finding higher mercury levels in their flesh in these high polluted states. So we're really having a problem. Something like swordfish, shark, tilapia, they're so polluted. If you look on the EPA website, they say these fish should never be eaten, never. Yet, if you go to any restaurant, you can order a swordfish. You have pregnant women eating swordfish. Yet, their site is so adamant about it, and said under no conditions should this fish be eaten by anyone. A lot of the other fish have such high levels, they say you shouldn't be eating more than once a week. Tuna generally has significantly high levels. In fact, they looked at one store and they took 127 cans of tuna and they tested it. Light tuna, the chunky tuna, it has one of the highest levels of mercury. It's the white tuna. They call it white tuna. The light tuna has a very low level of mercury. But they found some cans which were called light tuna that actually had mixtures of the two types of tuna, and the levels exceeded the FDA recommendations on safety levels several fold. So you really can't tell when you go buy a can of tuna whether it's really light tuna, which is the skipjack tuna, or the albacore tuna, which has a higher level. So, we're getting all these fish advisories constantly, and yet I see people eating it and thinking nothing of it, and pregnant women are eating it. And they don't realize that if they have fillings with mercury, they're getting flu vaccines with mercury, and they're eating fish with mercury, and they're breathing the air. They're getting a huge amount of mercury.
Well, let's see. Hold that thought for just a minute here. This is Dr. Stan of Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Russell Blaylock, and, of course, we're talking about this issue of mercury, really the tremendous amounts of mercury that we're coming in contact with. So, Russell, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, just hang on. We'll be with you in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Anyway, of course, I think it's so important that you understand what's going on and that you begin, of course, making the preparations to look after yourself and give serious consideration to getting rid of those mercury fillings, and certainly do not let them talk you into taking the influenza shots, which are known to contain a significant amount of mercury, and especially pregnant women, 6-year-old children. Why would you want to give them such a toxic substance? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got just 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Russell, why don't you go ahead?
All right. This is something important about the flu vaccine. There's a new study out, came out in the Archives of Internal Medicine, and they did a 30-year study of the flu vaccine effectiveness in reducing death in the elderly. And what they found is that before 1980, only 15 to 20% of the people took the flu vaccine. After 1980, 65% took it. Yet death rates changed not one iota. And yet they're telling the public that you've got to get this flu vaccine if you're elderly because of the enormous death rate from flu. Yet their own statistics show the flu vaccine has not reduced that death rate one iota, and that it has been steady at 10% since the very beginning. So all of this is predicated on a lie. They even looked at people 85 years and older. They still found that the flu vaccine did not prevent any deaths whatsoever. So here you have, in the Archives of Internal Medicine, which is one of the prestigious medical journals, an article, this is 2005 that this article came out, showing in a 30-year study of the entire population of the United States that the flu vaccine has not prevented one single flu death.
Well, I hope our listeners at least will not. Anyway, Russell, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here. We look forward to having you on real soon.
Well, thank you, Dr. I appreciate it.
Good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that was Dr. Russell Blaylock here. Certainly, I hope that you will want to get a copy of this audio tape. I hope you'll want to get the material that we have. The shows, without any question at all, they're poisoning the minds of our children. This is not happening by accident. The studies are there. They know what's going on. They're covering them up. Much of this was brought out in the hearings back in 10 years ago when this, Congressman Don Burton held hearings on autism, totally suppressed by the controlled media. How could that be? Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who listen to our programs regularly will know that it is our contention that there is organized evil working at the highest levels of our government and with the media, and certainly within the Centers for Disease Control and with the National Institute of Health and other government organizations that know exactly what they're doing. The one thing is they don't want the American people to know what they're doing, and so we hope that you will certainly want to get the material that is readily available from Radio Liberty, and as soon as we get back from our break, where I will tell you exactly the things that you should be getting to protect your health. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we just want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours a day all across America, trying to educate the American people about what's going on. Now, if you'd like to get information on mercury, we have 2 excellent 4-tape sets on that subject. We have, of course, this evening's program with Dr. Russell Blaylock. We have recent interviews with Dr. Ayoub and with Dr. Mark Geyer. That's Dr. Ayoub and Dr. Mark Geyer. If you know anybody who has autistic children or children with learning disabilities, you need to get that information, because certainly there's new evidence that some of these conditions are reversible, but you've got to get them treated, and everything is being done by the government to discourage you from getting treatment. Why would anybody want to hurt a child? And I would say, why would anybody want to abort 50 million unborn children here in the United States? There really are people who have a different worldview, because I believe they worship a different God. We carry a wonderful book on the subject of Mercury. It's called Evidence of Harm. That's Evidence of Harm. It's a story of the families with autistic children, and it's a heartbreaking story. We carry a video on this subject. It's called Evidence of Harm. Anyway, just ask for the DVD on Mercury, and you'll actually see the smoking tooth that Dr. Blaylock told about. You can also see that on the IATO website, but we do have a video that shows that. And then certainly we have other material that is readily available on Mercury. If you want more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will want to get our material on fluoride. This is another thing that they're doing intentionally to destroy the minds of our children. And certainly, if you doubt that, you can go to the website, which represents the union of the scientists who work at the EPA. That's NTEU280.org, NTEU280.org, National Treasury. Employers Union, NTEU280.org. Pull down everything on the website, read it through, and weep to understand how they're poisoning the minds of our children in America. Actually, of course, these children will drop 5 to 10 points in their IQ, and you get a significant increase in the number of children with IQs around 70, about 3 times what you'd expect in the areas that are fluoridated. And, of course, there are no geniuses, no really outstanding people, a lot of mediocre people. Why would anybody do that? You need, of course, to get my talk, The Hidden Agenda, and there's a wonderful syllabus that comes with that. We have the book, The Fluoride Deception. We have 2 4 tape sets. We have a video called Water Fluoridation. You'll hear national leaders. You'll hear Sidney Philip Mullinex. You'll hear the former chief health officer in New Zealand, who used to be pro-fluoride until he really evaluated what was going on. You'll hear the interview with the professor up in Toronto, Canada, who I personally talked to. Of course, he has put out a great deal of information on water fluoridation. I asked him to come on my radio program, and he said, I can't. I can't come on your program. I've been threatened. I won't risk my children. I won't risk my job here, but you can read what I've set up on the Internet. And so you'll actually see the interview with that professor from Canada. So that's called water fluoridation. All of this information is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do carry many of the items that Russell talked about tonight, in the way of health products, certainly the vitamins and the selenium and the magnesium that you need to protect your brain. So if you'd like more information, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And then, of course, please pray for America. Pray for revival, because if we don't turn back to God, God will never again bless this nation. And lastly, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line. Arthur Burnclaw from Veterans for Constitutional Rights. Is that the right name, Arthur?
No, it's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited.
All right, fine. Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. And so Arthur certainly is a advocate for our servicemen. Many of them have coming back from certainly the Vietnam War, and some of them coming back from the first Gulf War, and now, of course, coming back from the second Gulf War. Do we have any idea of what percentage of our veterans returning from Gulf War II are coming down with these unexplained illnesses similar to the Gulf War illness we saw in Gulf War I?
It's something like 25-26% right off the bat, but that's going to keep increasing.
All right, fine. Certainly, do they have any idea what it is? Are these young men able to get anything besides the Prozac and all these medications that suggest that there's something wrong with their brains?
Well, there's an awful lot of radiation poisoning coming back in here, an awful lot of this. I'm not saying it's the whole thing, but it's a good part of it.
Well, of course, the thing I understand is the government has bought up all the material that you would ordinarily use for testing, so it's almost impossible to run the test to see how many of our young people actually are certainly poisoned by depleted uranium. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, the Pentagon couldn't be happier that nobody can run the tests. They couldn't be happier about it, because they don't want people to know what's going on here. And this is, I just attended a civic meeting tonight. It was on, they had eight people from the Environmental Protective Association here. And this is on cleaning up an aviation site in our area. And the groundwater there is all contaminated. And, you know, when you have eight people from the EPA sitting there with worried looks on their faces, you know that there is something up, and they're very concerned to send eight people down.
Well, you're talking about, of course, this is in your specific area where you live today.
Yes. Yes, specific area where I live, here in New York.
Right.
And the reason they had them all come down there is they found they tested some sites in the high school, and they found some sites were kind of dangerous.
I see. Well, now, what were sort of things were these? Were these mercury, or were they lead?
Vinyl chloride, for one. And they've been dumping and burying, big cans of stuff in there now for years. And they bulldoze an area, they bury all these cans of stuff in there, and then they cover it back over. And the groundwater is no good. Now, since we've moved out here, Dr. Stan, we have not even had the water from out here. We get bottled water in from out of the state. We don't even fool with the water out here.
And, of course, you're in upstate, New York, is it, or what?
Suffolk County.
Okay, fine. So, basically, of course, you have a problem there. But as far as the depleted uranium among our veterans, you know, certainly there's been a great deal of information that's come out within in the Internet about the depleted uranium poisoning, and almost nothing in the controlled media. And you have to ask yourself why. Certainly, throughout the rest of the world, in many countries in Europe, and certainly in the Arab countries, they're frightened to death about it. There's all sorts of articles there by their doctors, and yet you're totally able to block out here in the United States any mention of this sort of thing. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, why don't you go ahead and pick up this story there, Arthur?
Okay, when you say controlled media, Dr. Stan, you hit the nail right on the head. we've been having extremely great cooperation from the Chicago Sun-Times for the last 2 years. And a lady by the name of Cheryl Reed has been writing the Wounded Warriors articles. And she has been fantastically relentless against the VA. And I knew sooner or later this has got to come to an end. All of a sudden, she's not returning calls, and the Wounded Warrior series disappears from the paper. Now I find out that the head of the VA made a visit out there to Chicago, and they kicked her upstairs to a better-paying job. She's a book editor now, and she won't even talk to you about veteran stuff. And the Knight Ridder newspapers, who have been very cooperative on the exposing the VA and what's going on with the Veterans Administration, they were sold. And the head reporter who is doing all the articles on this, he doesn't return calls anymore. So I have no doubt he's been visited by the VA secretary and his entire entourage. I have no doubt about that. And you're right when you say the controlled media.
Well, of course, it's really such a tragedy. I think that the American people really should understand what's happening as far as depleted uranium. They should understand that, you know, from the first Gulf War, you know, certainly is somewhere between a third and a half of the people who came back from the first Gulf War. There's 695,000 of them, but a third to a half of them have these symptoms of autoimmune disease.
With a
significant increase in the incidence of multiple sclerosis and Lou Gehrig's disease. And yet the government says, oh, shucks, we have no idea why these things happened. Sure, they know why it happened. You remember Agent Orange?
Yes, they kept inserting there was nothing.
Agent Orange didn't do no harm at all. And then probably eventually Admiral Zumwalt came out. And, I mean, here was a man who controlled our Naval Department during that time and finally came out and told the truth about what Agent Orange was doing. And, of course, eventually I think all of the Agent Orange victims have been given some sort of a disability, haven't they?
Most of them, yeah, most of them. But it took Admiral Zumwalt losing a son to do that.
And, of course, the thing is that they would rather lie than tell the truth. You remember how they lied about Tillman, you know, this young man who gave up a football career to join the military, and they lied about how he died. And Jessica Lynch, they lied about how she died, and it seems like a pattern that there are people who would rather lie than tell the truth. And if they'll lie about those things, what else would they lie to cover up?
You can always tell when they're dead.
Just be back here in just a moment with Arthur Burnclough. Okay, Arthur, go ahead and pick up the story.
You can always tell when the government is lying. If their mouth is moving, then they're lying. You know, this is the government, and this is the government we've gotten to know since the last almost 6 years of Mr. Bush. This is incredible what goes on with the government and what they cover up. Now, in the first Gulf War, we had a lot of chemical and biological injuries coming back here. People who were affected by Mycoplasma incognitus fermentis, but the chemical factor has not been a strong factor in Gulf War II. It has been more in Gulf War II on the depleted uranium and the radiation. Although you had depleted uranium and radiation in Gulf War I, but you know, the combat time there was very little compared to we've been there over 3 years now.
Well, I think the thing in Gulf War I, those who have not yet seen Joyce Riley's excellent video on that subject, we do have
to
share it. The thing is that when they blew up the chemical and biological dumps at Kamachi and a number of the others, they exposed, literally hundreds of thousands of our soldiers to chemical weapons, and they lied about it. They said no chemical weapons. Well, maybe just a few chemical weapons. Well, maybe 5,000, maybe 10,000, maybe 20,000, maybe 50,000, and I think the last figure I mentioned was somewhere between 50 and 100,000, they admitted, were exposed to chemical weapons, and they knew that all along, and so the officers actually went before Congress and lied about with absolutely no evidence of chemical weapons. And if you haven't seen Joyce Riley's material, it's excellent.
I don't know if you remember the hearings where Senator Specter was running the hearings for the Senate, and they had this man from the Department of Defense down there, and he lied and lied and lied, and Specter runs right over to him after the hearings, shakes his hand, and treats him like a long-lost brother. And they probably are long-lost brothers of a kind. I don't know what, but...
Well, I'll tell you what. Senator Specter, of course, was the man who, during the Kennedy assassination hearings, was an assistant counsel. He was the man who came up with the idea of the magic bullet and sold it to everybody. He was rewarded by becoming Senator Arlen Specter. And, of course, he's a 33rd-degree Mason, among other things. So maybe they were, he and his father were long-lost brothers.
Yep.
Brothers the lost.
I think you got it, Dr. Stan. comes down to the Masons, and that's where it's at.
Well, that's one
the
of the
Illuminati,
things,
the Masons.
There's all sorts of organizations out there. That's simply one of them. But I do not believe we can have people in the highest levels of our government who've sworn secret oaths to a secret society, and their loyalty to that secret society supersedes their loyalty to the Constitution or to America. And certainly there's been so many cover-ups. And Arlen Specter is usually right out there in the lead of all of them, going all the way back to the Kennedy assassination. And there are very, very few people who know that. So go ahead, Arthur. Anyway, what's happening now as far as the... are they being any more fair with the veterans?
No. In fact, it's worse. You know, Chicago, we thought after they had that town hall meeting with Senator Obama and Senator Durbin, and the VA was forced to add people to the Chicago regional office to adjudicate claims. We thought that they had put an end to it, and they did put an end to it for about 3 or 4 weeks, and now it's worse than ever.
What is worse than ever. Listeners, of what really goes on in the Chicago Veterans Administration office?
Okay, Chicago has been, not only Chicago, state of Illinois has been dead last in veterans benefits for over 20 years now. 20 years in a row. They have been dead last, and Michigan is pretty close to that. They're pretty close to it, but Chicago has got the worst regional office in the country, and they've got an agenda to deny, but then so do all Veterans Administration offices. It just happens to be a little worse in Chicago than any other place around. And they had those town hall meetings with the two senators, and the Chicago Sun-Times was hitting them daily, left and right. So they went underground for a little while. They put on some new people to work at the VA office, and for a while they were finding people giving them some disabilities. And 3 or 4 weeks, it went back to even worse than what it was before. So you can't trust the VA. There's only one solution for the VA, and that's take them out, shut them down, put them out of business. That's the only chance a veteran has if they close up that predatory agency. But I've got something very good for us here tonight, Dr. Stan. I've got an open letter to Pentagon employees. And I think you're going to like this, Dr. Stan.
Go right ahead.
Have you heard of a writer by the name of Ted Tweetmeyer?
No, I really haven't.
Okay, I've got to give him credit. And... Radical Al in Colorado, who is the one who put me on to Ted Tweetmeyer. This is an open letter to Pentagon employees. What exactly is the government? A collection of laws, buildings, thousands of computers, and billions of files? No. The government is made up of employees who work for the people, and without great employees, all of the computers, documents, and buildings mean absolutely nothing. All through world history, when a government blatantly ignored its people, a bloody revolution has always followed. I am writing this letter to all our public servants who work in this building and all others connected with it. If you are not a public servant but know someone who is, please forward a copy to them. If you work there and have read this for your job as an analyst, also read it for yourself, your family, and friends. To paraphrase the words of the president, uttered in 2001, you're either with us or against us. The past 5 years has now shown us the ugly head of tyranny, and just who is against us. Now, what America is not. As a government employee, you already know that America and the government belongs to the citizens of the United States of America. Our beloved Constitution states this. It is the land of the free based on the very foundation of America. It is not the land of slavery, suppression of liberties, destroying freedoms, promoting servitude, taking over sovereign countries, using lies or creating suffocating tyranny across the planet. It cannot be a country where the whims and wills of just one man runs all, decides everything, and snubs his nose at all checks and balances. Now, your oath and duty, as a servant of the people, you are sworn to protect America from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. This is not an option, possibility, wild idea, or wishful thinking. It is a fact, and it is your job to protect everyone, even that person you see in the street every day, that child walking to catch the school bus with dreams and aspirations you see each morning driving to work. Millions of senior citizens you already know, and the millions that you do not know, count on you to do the right thing. You are closer to becoming one of these people with each passing day. Your watch and actions also affect all those who cannot care for themselves without help from others. If you disagree, I challenge you to prove me wrong. These are just a sample of some 300 million people you are sworn to protect, and that must come first. If you're ordered to do something for the government that violates the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, you are a criminal for doing so. No matter what you're told or how you may mentally justify it, you'll know the order is wrong the moment you hear it or read it. The cover, all dog-eared national security label, is used to justify any act that will infringe on either the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. An alarm bell should sound off in your head when you hear it. If a murderer is guilty of murder, no man or woman can change that fact. So it is with actions of all government employees. They must place the Constitution and the Bill of Rights first above all others. That is their duty. If something is wrong, it must be questioned. They cannot act like mindless robots. And these are questions you must ask yourself. Thinking you have an ultra-secure job working for the government, do you think that whatever befalls children, senior citizens, and millions of others could never affect you? Think again. If the new pseudo-Fourth Reich, which has illegally assumed power today, has no use for the elderly, what will become of you when you are older, or perhaps even sooner, if illness or an accident incapacitates you? Have you thought about this? You really should. Now, how is your DNA? Genetics is the key. Think about your family and your genetics. Do you or members of your family have any genetic imperfections? If either of your parents has any genetic defects, then you will carry them too. For those in power who are attempting to create a worldwide empire, be assured defective people have no place in their future. Why is DNA quietly collected by hospitals when an infant is born through a heel lance without the parent's permission and sent to a repository? I didn't know this, Dr. Stan. I just found this out. It is because hospital staff have nothing more important to do? Nope. The failed Third Reich of just 60 years ago was obsessed with genetics, too. It had a vicious campaign to wipe out undesirable races and exterminate all imperfect human beings. Are you confident that you, your spouse, family members, or children could never be silently placed on a FEMA red or blue list? Think that could only happen to people like me that write and speak out? Think again. Where freedom began, you should go visit it with your family and remember. In Washington is a plaque put up by the Daughters of the American Revolution, dated May 20th, 1910. And that's on the left side. On the right side is the actual church pew where Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death."
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much. And certainly I share the concern that many things are going on. I've never heard of it. I have not been able to, not aware of the fact that doing heel sticks on children without their parents' permission. Maybe somebody out there in the audience would know about that. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly, Arthur, have you checked out doing Heels checks?
Because I sure have.
Have you checked it out? What did you find out?
I checked it out with three doctors, and they said, how did you know that?
Uh-huh. So they said that it's actually going. Were these doctors or
Were these
pediatricians, the people who work in the recovery, in the nursery?
Pediatricians.
I see. Okay.
I couldn't believe this when I heard it, but right. I checked with three doctors in three different hospitals, and they all said, how did you know that?
I said, well, how did they justify doing that without the parents' permission?
They don't get the parents' permission. They don't even ask the parents' permission.
Well, Sidney, that could have serious implications.
Of course, I think,
and could open the doctors to a lawsuit. So these are pediatricians who actually admit that they're doing this sort of thing.
Yes,
without
they do.
The parents' permission.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is really a criminal act, and of course, I think people have to understand that there really is a program to try to use genetic engineering to create perfect people. This was actually what Adolf Hitler did. The reason they wanted to get rid of the people with mental defects, the reason they wanted to get those who had mental deficiency, the Jews, the gypsies, they were trying to breed a perfect Aryan man. And as difficult it is for the average individual to accept this fact, there really are people there who have an entirely different worldview. And this goes back to the ideas of Malthus, who back in 1826 was talking about, controlling the population. And, of course, his ideas were picked up by a fellow named Galton, whose ideas were picked up by Margaret Sanger, who formed Planned Parenthood, funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. And, of course, they funded the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Germany. Yep. Before Adolf Hitler came in, and there, with the help of Ernst Rudin, they established the Nazi genetic engineering programs, which ended up at Auschwitz and Dachau and Buchenwald and the other places. And, of course, here in the United States, we were actually sterilizing people with metal defects, leading up to the Second World War. We don't talk about that. They used to call it eugenics. Now they call it population control. But, ladies and gentlemen, it's exactly the same thing.
Anyway, Dr. Stan, 300 years ago, Patrick Henry, the man I mentioned before, American patriot, he stood up in a Richmond, Virginia church about 100 miles south of Washington. And if you've never been there, you should go as soon as you can. Patrick Henry arose from his pew to boldly stand up against the king with his lengthy but poignant speech about freedom and liberty, concluding with, give me liberty or give me death. Now, if you think about the meaning of those words, Dr. Stan, and the raw courage it took to speak them, do you still believe we don't have a self-appointed king in Washington now, a dictator today? Do you think we don't have anybody working toward creating an American empire? Now, when was the last time that Capitol Hill refused Mr. Bush something he wanted? Even those who go in front of Senate hearings for approval, no matter how bad or unqualified they are still going to get appointed. And shortly after taking office, the new U.S. Attorney General, that's Mr. Gonzalez, declared that Bush is above the law. Bush has declared, I'm the decider, whether the Secretary of Defense goes or stays. Isn't this the very same tune that Adolf Hitler sang as he took absolute power and made his appointments? Have you forgotten about our constitutional system of checks and balances that are supposed to protect us from this?
Okay, we'll hold that thought right there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is Arthur Bernclough, and we're supposed to be talking about Veterans Affairs. Arthur, let's get back to the Veterans Affairs.
I'm going to get into this, but I'd sure like to finish this essay. I'm almost done with this.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I really prefer doing a conversation rather than an essay, but go ahead and finish it up.
Okay. It's a cushy job in the occult-oriented Pentagon in your home in southern Pennsylvania, Baltimore, Fairfax, Alexandria, Dale City, or any other bedroom community. More important than maintaining freedom for all, and if our freedoms and liberties are taken away, what do any of us have left? What fills the void when freedom is gone? Do you foolishly believe that any Pentagon-created and or funded terrorist organization is truly our friend? Patrick Henry and America's founding fathers knew this and more, since they lived under England's tyrannical government. Has tyranny raised its ugly head again in the past 100 years? And our technically bankrupt country now funds the world's largest military. Now, does this sound familiar? Can you or I print fake, worthless money when we need it as the government does? Hitler did the very same thing, too. The German people had a fairly good life before the war. That is, until the global bankers decided to teach the German bankers a lesson by unleashing their house painter puppet madman to raise hell in Europe. Millions lost their lives while this lesson was being taught to the bankers by megalomaniac power families who worked the puppets behind the scenes. Meanwhile, the Swiss were praised by the world for their neutrality, while quietly funneling money to the Third Reich, all the while inspecting German POW camps to ensure humane treatment. You think this can't happen again? If so, why not? What about that sole source contract of more than $300 million to Halliburton for American POW camps? And who do you think they're for? A goat herder they capture in the Middle East? Mexicans that cross into Arizona? I think we all know better. Now, this is like Germany all over again. So how did bankrupt Germany suddenly fund a multi-billion dollar army? According to history, it was with the help of your commander-in-chief's grandfather, Prescott Bush, through American and Swiss banks. And make no mistake, the goal of a Fourth Reich is alive and well today, and a blind man can see what's coming. And are not the cameras on the interstate around Washington, like those on highways like Route 66, every tenth of a mile, screaming police state at you? And not one of these cameras has any ability to fight terrorism, that shadowy scapegoat of the night that is created as justification for the police state. The very freedom and lifeblood of America is at stake now, and all will be lost if you and others who work in the Pentagon continue to help make the Fourth Reich reach full power. All you need to do is nothing. If this happens, who will come to the aid of you, your family, friends, and the American people? No one will. It seems like we've become the most hated country on earth, strictly by design and not by accident. World hatred will ensure the American people will have nobody to save them from FEMA's extermination. And that's about it on that.
Fine. Well, thank you very much. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly, I share Arthur's concern about what's going on in the world. And I really feel that we see they are using the threat of terrorism to increase the government control over the lives of the people. And if they were really concerned about the threat of terrorism, why, immediately after the 9-1-1 attack, they would have sealed our borders. They did not do that. If they were really concerned about the threat of terrorism, they would have increased the monitoring at our ports, and they have not done that. If they were really concerned about terrorism, they would have made sure that every pilot was able to carry a gun. They have effectively blocked that. If they were really concerned about terrorism, they would have allowed racial profiling of people getting on planes. They have done everything they could to block that. And so perhaps nothing is as it appears to be. In the name of a war on terrorism, we see progressive increase of government control over the lives of the people. We see a massive program of spying on the American people. William Odom, formerly the Lieutenant General William Odom,
yes,
formerly the director of the NSA, wrote a book in 2003, I think it was called Fixing Intelligence, in which he asked a series of questions since he had sworn oaths that he would not reveal what was going on. He simply asked questions, and there were three of them that stand out. One, should the CIA be funding assassinations? Should the CIA have people actually stationed journalists stationed in the media? And the third was, should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? And, of course, that's Fixing Intelligence. And if you'd like to get the pages where that quotation comes from, we'll be glad to get it for you. Well, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have any thoughts at all about what Arthur was writing about. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I think that there is a good deal of concern, right to be justifiably concerned, about the way things are going. And, of course, we have a massive intelligence force here in the United States that is spying on the American people. Now, there's been a lot of talk recently about the intelligence agencies tapping the telephones of the terrorists, you know, and overseas calls. Ladies and gentlemen, what they are doing is focusing our attention on the wrong issue. They have been listening to all of our telephone calls and reading all of our faxes and all of our emails going back a number of years under something known as Project Echelon. You can Google that in. You'll find out about it. So why suddenly all this talk about, how terrible it is the New York Times let people know that we were tapping the telephones on terrorists? Ladies and gentlemen, they're tapping everybody's telephone. And in a similar manner, recently there's been a tremendous fuss about the fact that the papers exposed the fact that our government was tracking the financial transactions of the terrorists. They're not tracking only the terrorists. They are tracking the financial transactions of every citizen in our country, and that's one of the big problems, that they are using the threat of terrorism to establish a police state, which is exactly what you're saying, isn't it, Arthur?
Yes, it certainly is. And I've got some good news from our last program, Dr. Stan.
All right.
You remember the letter I read about attorneys and claim processes,
mm-hmm.
that the DAV sent out 500,000 of these letters?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. I've gotten so many calls and letters that have come into me since then, and so many people have quit the DAV and other service organizations because of this. And if you remember the letter, said that legislation was introduced in both the House and the Senate, known as the Veterans Choice of Representation Act, the H.R. 4914 and Senate Bill 2694. And these bills were introduced to try to amend Title 38, which controls the VA veterans' benefits, to remove certain limitations on attorney representation of claimants for veterans' benefits in administrative proceedings before the VA. And the reason that this legislation was introduced, according to staff from both House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, is that veterans have been complaining for years about not having the right to hire an attorney to represent them during a claims process. Now, the DAV wrote in their letter that they were concerned that the current claims process does not work properly. Yeah, well, now they're concerned. It hasn't worked properly for 75 years. They said
Hold that thought. I thought we're going to have to bring our stations back on board here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Arthur Bernclau, and he's talking about something we talked about a month or so ago. And this was a letter that was sent out by the DAV, as I recall.
Oh, yes.
Or was it the Veterans Administration?
No, it was the DAV, and I they hit an all-time low by sending this out.
All right, now, the DAV, for our listeners, is the Department of Veterans Affairs.
No, DAV is the Disabled American Veterans Organization.
All right, fine. This is a non-governmental organization.
That's right.
That is trying to get the veterans to oppose legislation that might have given them an opportunity to have a lawyer. Was that right at the hearings?
They're insulting everyone's intelligence. They think everybody is stupid. So they said here, we believe Congress should focus on correcting the process and not making it more adversarial and legalistic. That's what their letter said. The question should not be whether veterans have a right to hire an attorney, but how to improve claims processing. Clearly, the solution is not to allow attorneys into the process. Now, if that's the solution, Dr. Stan, how come the VA has 1,200 lawyers? The VA benefits delivery system was designed to be open, informal, and helpful to veterans. The goal was to ensure that veterans receive the benefits of a grateful nation has provided for them rather than discourage or inhibit their claims with government red tape or lengthy litigation. Allowing attorneys into the process would interfere with the goal and create a system that's more adversarial and legalistic and less veteran-friendly. I urge you to write your representative and senators urging them to oppose the enactment of this bill and truly focus the attention of Congress on ways to ensure the process performs in a manner for which it was designed. An ex parte, that means party of one, non-adversarial system, with VA being obligated to provide all benefits allowable under the law. Now, I think they got non-adversarial confused with non-confrontational. And since your program on there, the response has been enormous.
How many people. Calls did you get? Do you have any idea?
I've gotten at least 100.5 calls on there. I've gotten a whole slew of letters.
All right, fine. So I think for our listeners to understand, basically the disabled American veterans was trying to prevent this legislation from getting passed. It would allow the veteran to have a lawyer there in court. Now, of course, they have these hearings. The hearings are slanted. The Veterans Administration has all sorts of lawyers, and their job is to keep the veterans from getting their benefits. The DAV, siding with the government against the veterans, is trying to prevent this legislation from going through that would allow the veteran to have a legal counsel. And what people don't understand is the DAV and the American Legion and so many of these veterans organizations do not represent the veterans. They have been co-opted by people from the government, placing their people into positions of power. And the veterans rally behind these organizations, thinking it's going to represent them, just exactly as the doctors rally behind their state medical association and the AMA. And yet those organizations have been betraying the doctors and their patients for many years. So basically, what happened to the legislation? Did it get through or not?
It hasn't been voted on yet. We're hoping it gets through. If it doesn't, we're going to keep bringing it up and bringing it up and bringing it up until it gets through. We're not going to give up on this. This is something that has to be done. And all these service organizations that become chartered, the charter is done through the VA, actually through Congress and the VA, and once one of these organizations become chartered, they are like an extension of the VA. And all they're worried about is the freebies that they get from the government, and, they get free rent in a VA building or a hospital. They get free furniture, free computer equipment, free postage, free telephone. Everything is a freebie, a staff to run the office, tax-exempt status.
Well, now, who actually pays the people who work for these veterans organizations?
The taxpayer pays. They're paid out of the taxes that the government collects.
Well,
the VA pays them.
Don't they actually have people, if you belong to the Disabled American Veterans or the American Legion, don't you pay bill by me dues or belong to the organization?
I didn't get the question. Could you ask me again?
Don't you actually have to pay dues if you're going to
belong? Oh, yes. Yeah.
So that is one source of their income. But you say that the greatest source of their income is government.
Yes. Government is the greatest source of their income. And the DAV is known for going up on critical care floors and psychiatric wards, trying to push their lifetime memberships. They're known for that. They've been kicked out of a few hospitals for that.
All right, fine. So basically, in effect, why we find the disabled American veterans are certainly representing the government's interest rather than that of the disabled American veterans. So,
the reason they're doing this, the letter, that letter that went out to 500,000 people, is they're trying to protect their protected legal turf that the VA gives them. But it's not going to do them any good because they know that sooner or later, them and their whole system is going to fall.
Do you think more and more of the veterans are beginning to understand the veterans organizations do not represent them?
They're starting to learn.
All right.
Membership is down. People are not paying their dues. People are dropping out like flies.
Well, I think, of course, they've co-opted almost all of our organizations. They have their people planted in them, and they're neutralizing their effectiveness, which is one reason why we're in such much trouble today. And there are only a few organizations that I know of out there across America that I really trust. You know, there are many of the so-called pro-gun organizations. I don't trust them. There's one I put my trust in explicitly. But the same thing is true with so many organizations. They're funneling the people's money. And, of course, they're not doing anything at all. They create this idea of a threat, you've got to give us money, or we're going to represent you, and that's not their purpose at all.
Exactly.
It may be just to make money, or it may very well be to get money so that they can actually undermine the very things that you think they're going to be supporting. I saw this in organized medicine. I see this happening today in organized dentistry, and it's about time that the good people understood. The other side co-opts our organizations, get their people into key positions, and then, of course, uses our own organizations to undermine the fabric of our society.
Well, it takes time for people to realize what's going on, sometimes years and years and years. But once they get the idea fixed in their head, it's time to overthrow them. Look, Dr. Stan, in France, 200 years ago, they went through something similar to what we're going through now. And nothing was ever solved in that country until they stormed the Bastille and freed all the prisoners.
Well, unfortunately, many times that specific revolution, instead of making things better, made it a lot worse. It was
sometimes, yes.
Terror. And basically, France has never had a stable government since that time. In fact, within just a few years, they had a new dictator. His name is Napoleon Bonaparte, who plunged all of Europe into a terrible, terrible war. So what you need is educated people, not necessarily people out storming the Bastille and releasing the six prisoners who were there. Well, my telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And my plea is get educated, get involved, and your job is to get other people to understand what's going on and rally behind the cause of individual freedom. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people who want to get people involved in doing things that are counterproductive. And storming the Bastille today would be not very effective, I can promise you.
It's a thought. Anyhow, Dr. Stan.
Look at France. Would you really want to live in France today?
Never.
Yeah, that's right. And
that's
the end result of what happened after the French Revolution, when they destroyed the church, when they destroyed the moral fabric of their society.
Yeah.
They brought in this idea of liberty and equality, having forgotten that free men are never equal and equal men are never free.
Liberty, equality, fraternity.
Right. Okay, fine. Well, we've got just about 10 more minutes if you're out there in the listening audience. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I think the important thing is for people to understand the basic philosophy of what's happening and why we're losing America. So go ahead, Arthur.
You know, I was asked this question by an attorney, and he said, I can't understand the hold that the Veterans Administration has on veterans and how they can get away with all this. He says, all these things they're doing is illegal. I said, yeah, according to the Constitution, it's illegal, but according to United States Code Title 38, it's not illegal, and here's the main law that they hold veterans in bondage. And just listen to this law here, Dr. Stan. You tell me what you think. This is United States Code Title 38, and it's Section 511A. And here's how it reads. The Secretary shall decide all questions of law and fact necessary to a decision by the Secretary under a law that affects the provision of benefits by the Secretary to veterans or the dependents or survivors of veterans. The decision of the Secretary as to any such question shall be final and conclusive and may not be reviewed by any other official or by any court, whether by an action in the nature of mandamus or otherwise. U.S.C. Title 38, Section 511, guarantees decisions of the Secretary finality, and this single act of the Congress has removed the VA out from any congressional control, and the Congress has no supervisory authority over it. The United States Congress can pass all the legislation it wants, and as long as 511A remains on the books, the VA is authorized by this section to totally ignore any part thereof, as well as the law in its entirety, if it so desires.
Well, I think that's really a rather frightening thing, of course.
The only thing to do would be to
Have Congress negate that part of the code. But, of course, most congressmen have no idea, and I suspect that most of the veterans have no idea what's in the law. Because they made it intentionally so confusing and so complicated that people are totally unaware of what's going on.
They've had it out here for 75 years, and they haven't changed it.
Right.
Here's the other one. This is the one that we're looking to get removed. This law is called USC Title 38, and it's called Section 5904. And it states that when a veteran files a claim with his VA regional office, he is only permitted to use a representative of a veteran's organization to present and argue the merits of his claim unless he can locate an attorney who is willing to work for free, pro bono. And this is the VA's unnecessarily paternalistic concept of a fair hearing where no attorney will look over their shoulder and compel them to comply with the rule of law. Meanwhile, the VA has over 1,200 of their own attorneys creatively finding new and better ways to circumnavigate the law and deny claims. The only other way that a veteran can have his own attorney is if the Board of Veterans Appeals has made a final decision. Now, I'll add a footnote to this. The Board of Veterans Appeals takes about 7 years to give you a final decision. So what happens in the meantime? You either expire or you give up out of frustration and say, you know, it's I can't fight City Hall. More veterans I know give up their claims when they get tired of fighting them.
Well, don't you really think that's part of this psychological game they're playing with the veterans?
Of course. And they tied up the service organizations by passing Section 5902A, which is called the Gravy Train Statute. And that gives them all the freebies.
Are you talking about, of course, these are the veterans organizations, which are paid by the government, really, of course, not to represent the veterans, but not to represent the veterans.
Exactly. That's the biggest betrayal of all. And the law is quite unique. It serves as a payback, or shall we say, loot to the National Veterans Service Organization for services not rendered. And it's time now we tell it like it is for any of you veterans listening out there. This is the biggest betrayal in our history as veteran betrays veteran. For keeping the VA's quota of service-connected claims at the minimum of amount of 4% positive adjudication rate for the veteran, this law was written into USC Title 38 as a reward for the service organizations for the wonderful misrepresentation they give our veterans in their VA compensation claims. Now, aside from the congressional charters given to them by Congress, and here's the way the law reads. The law reads very simple. The Gravy Train Statute reads, the Secretary of the VA, at his discretion, may give rent-free office space to the service organization, the chartered service organizations. Nothing more is written. However, a liberal interpretation by a grateful VA also gives them free heating, electricity, air conditioning, free telephone service, free postage, stationery, free furniture, free computer equipment, staff to run the office, and a tax-exempt status. And that's rewards for the misrepresentation they give to veterans in their claims action. And this farce is being carried on at all the expense of all of America's taxpayers, and I call it the biggest boondoggle in all of America's history, and a crass betrayal of our veterans by these freeloading service organizations.
Well, now, do the leaders of these organizations get substantial salaries?
Oh, they sure do.
And how do they get to be a leader? I mean, you're appointed to that position, you're elected to that position. How do you get to be a key player in a veterans organization, get a salary?
It's the good old boys club, Dr. Stan. You've probably heard of it with the politicians. It's called the good old boys club.
And so if you just sort of go along and get along, why, eventually you'll get into a position where you'll get a salary, too, then.
Exactly. And many, many times, many, many times, we find somebody leaves being the head of a service organization, and immediately he changes, he becomes a legal representative for the House Veterans Affairs Committee or the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. They interchange in jobs. And then if he leaves that job, he may end up working for the VA. It's what we call the Iron Triangle.
And so they simply go back and forth from one organization to another, always being well rewarded for their failure not to represent the veterans.
Exactly,
Dr.
Stan.
Becoming increasingly aware of this fact. You know, it takes a long time for people to really realize that these organizations where they belong to, and of course they paid their dues over a long period of time, and I'm sure most of them are sending out newsletters or news magazines on a regular basis, sometimes very glossy and good-looking. But do you think that many of the Veterans Administration, pardon me, many of the veterans realize how they're being betrayed?
I think the ones who have any intelligence realize how they're being betrayed. In the beginning, there was blind following, saying, you know, my government, right or wrong. And a lot of veterans still think that way. My government, right or wrong, hey, maybe I'm really not disabled if they keep telling me I'm not disabled. You know, this is going on for years and years. And right now, I don't know if I told you, Dr. Stan, I'm in the process of speaking to attorneys. I'm trying to get a RICO suit together on the government because they have blocked my email. And I believe my server, Verizon, is helping them. Since July 11th, I haven't gotten an email coming through, and I have not been able to send one.
Well, that's rather unusual. Maybe you ought to just change your server.
I'm going to change my server. I'm going to move over, but I want to see if I can get something on these people and get them into court.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Arthur, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Go ahead.
Okay, Dr. Stan, it's been a pleasure to be on with you and speak to your listening audience. And for those of if you don't know my name, I'm Arthur N. Bernklau. I'm Executive Director of Veterans for Constitutional Law. We do need your help. We do need donations because we subsist on them. And nobody in our organization makes more than $1 a year. We're all volunteers, and most of us are disabled veterans. And I can be reached at 631 area code 474-4261, 631-474-4261. I'm very easily accessible, and if you're having a problem with the VA, we'd sure like to talk to you. Our address is Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at 112-112 Jefferson Avenue, 112 Jefferson Avenue, and that's in Port Jefferson, New York. Port Jefferson, New York, and our zip code is 11777, 11777, and if you want to send me a fax, it's 631-474-1968. And
all right,
if you're having a problem, we'd love to hear from you.
And, of course, Arthur Bernklau, what he does, of course, he represents veterans who are just mired down in all the information and all the details of the Veterans Administration, whose major purpose is not to provide for the veterans what they're entitled to, but to restrict their ability to get their claims through.
And it's never a charge for our services.
All right. Well, I think that's wonderful. I know that you've helped an awful lot of people get the benefits that they've been trying to get for such a long period of time. And it must get pretty discouraging for the veterans. You know, they go through this long dog and pony show, constantly being turned down, being turned down, being turned down, intentionally to play games with them to get them to the point where they'll eventually give up putting in their claims. You say only about 4% of claims?
Only 4%, and Dr. Stan, we've had a couple of suicides, too. We've had a couple of people get depressed and pull the plug on themselves.
I see. Well, of course,
and I keep telling them, this is the nature of the beast. Don't get depressed. Just get angrier. Keep coming after them.
And, of course, the great, great tragedy is the average veterans are without the ability to actually have a lawyer there, and that, of course, is because of certain specifications they put in the law. They have intentionally created a situation, an adversarial position, where they have lawyers and you don't, and they're going to drag it out just as long as they can, hoping you'll give up. Go hold just a moment. Arthur wants you to give your telephone number and your fax one more time, please.
Okay. We can be called at 631-474-4261. Fax number 631-474-1968. And if you're having a problem with the VA, Department of Defense, or the government, call me. Talk to me.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much for being with us. Really appreciate it.
And thank you once again, Dr. Smith.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Arthur Berncloud. And, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radiativity is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we try to reach out across America 5 hours a day, bringing you various subjects on and discussions on various subjects, information you're not going to get elsewhere. So if you'd like to get more information about Radio Liberty or to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We do carry a few products here. We do carry a Big Berkey or Berkey Light products. And if you have fluoridated drinking water, you really need to get the fluoride out of your water. And you can do that by getting a Big Berkey or a Berkey Light. And if you get it through us, you get a free video or 4 tapes that we produced. And our telephone number, again, for more information on these products is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you want to get our book. It's called The Brotherhood of Darkness, because it takes you into not only what's happening historically, but what is happening spiritually and the forces, really the spiritual forces behind so much of what's going on today. People find it's very difficult sometimes to understand why it is it seems to be we are increasingly being drawn into a conflict in the Middle East, and we may well be going to war with Iran, either directly through us or through Israel. But, you know, you have to understand that there are spiritual forces that are driving this, and as we talked about last night, it would appear to be that there is a cosmic agenda. There is a cosmic plan that is being enacted today, and many of the people in key positions in our government, whether they know it or not, are actors in this cosmic agenda, in this cosmic script. So if you'd like to, of course, begin to put things together, if you'd like to know something about the secret societies that really do exist, and they have existed for thousands of years, and they have modern-day manifestations like the Bohemian Grove and the Skull and Bones and Masonry and Rosicrucianism and Theosophy and, of course, the Order of the Garter and so many of these organizations, which most people have never heard of, because basically they're all continuations of the ancient mystery religions, which date back almost 6,000 years. So if you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You really should get out the pamphlets we put together called The Occult Hierarchy. That's The Occult Hierarchy. There are 3 pamphlets based upon the series of articles we've written and some of those that Dr. Dennis Kelly has written. That's The Occult Hierarchy. And then, of course, if you'd like to get more information, why we have a wonderful book written by Ted Flynn called The Hope of the Wicked. We have the book Lucifer's Children, or the video by the same title. We have the DVD and or video, the award-winning The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, that Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. We have a program called Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. And then if you haven't seen Joe Schimmel's wonderful videos, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. We really do encourage you to get that, and we'll be having Joe Schimmel on later this week talking about his latest the DVD called The Da Vinci Con, and it has very little to do with the Da Vinci Code, but it has to do with the forces, the spiritual forces behind that book. So you'll find it fascinating. But Joe will be with us tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, and I believe later this week for our afternoon program, and next week for the 2-hour program. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
questions. There are many people asking why. There are many people paying attention. There are many now who see the big lie.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Tuesday, the 1st of August, 2006. Watching the news? Shaking your head? Well, how far down this road are we going to go? How far until we, as Americans, and we as a people, and we as a species realize, hey, what's it going to take? What's it going to take?
We're there. We are there, yeah. Listeners. They're going to widen the ground offensive. They're moving into, it looks like now, I'm sorry to say it, but I do believe it to be, that we are moving into Iran and Syria. There is no ceasefire, and Omer says, Prime Minister of Israel says, there will be no ceasefire. We're going to continue, they say. And, of course, the United States is right there on their heels. What does all this mean? It means that the U.S. is looking for any justification to continue this offensive vis-a-vis through Israel. I believe this to be the situation that is going to get worse as the days go on. Now, the Israeli army, the IDF, has now found, the Israeli Defense Force, that they are not as powerful as they thought they were. And, of course, you heard Barry Shamish on the program say that he believed that Israel would lose this war. And he's been in IDF. He knows. However, yesterday I heard a statement that the Palestinian leader is now inside the Iranian embassy. And do we need to bomb the embassy? I couldn't believe the statement. That's where we are right now. Are we going to bomb the embassy?
Do the words perpetual war for perpetual peace have any meaning in this regard?
That's right, and that's where we are going. Now they're saying that, well, Syria may not be far off. They're calling up more of the reserves for the Israeli Defense Force. And at the same time, of course, we have the other distraction that's taking place in Cuba, given that Fidel